Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're coming fresh off of a massive weekend for TKO. Not only did we have UFC 317, which may just be the best UFC pay-per-view of the year, but we had WWE Night of Champions, which could be up there for one of the best WWE PLEs of the year. The TKO holding group doing well this weekend, loading up to end out June. And as we head into July, we're going to talk about both of these events and what they mean for the future of each promotion. Also, I have a new TV series review. Me and Lexi absolutely binged The Pit these last few days. And let me just tell you, it is a fantastic show. 15 episodes, must check out. We're going to be talking about that on today's episode as well. Kicking things off with new UFC fights. There's a lot been going on, guys. I recently saw that EA is bringing back a college basketball game. I've been trying to weed myself off of the video games. But if that comes out, I may have to become a part-time streamer, for goodness sakes. Make some YouTube videos. Who knows? But lots of exciting stuff going down. A lot of big NBA trades, NFL trades. I saw Jalen Ramsey going to the Steelers, Cam Johnson and Michael Porter Jr. being swapped between the Nuggets and Nets. I don't know. Whole bunch of baloney, but we ain't here to talk about none of that today. We're here to talk about a lot of UFC, a little bit of WWE, and even a little TV show recaps. Let's get right on into it with episode 202 of the Surprise Jab Podcast. And with the majority of our episodes, we talk about new UFC fights, new updates in the rankings. No updates in the rankings yet, as I am recording this Monday, June 30th. The rankings will update July 1st, but we do have a bunch of new UFC fights to discuss with you all in order of being announced. Let's start it off. First off, UFC Shanghai officially has your main event, Johnny Walker, Zhang Mingyang. This had been rumored. We were waiting for this. And yes, it is happening. The number 12 and number 14 light heavyweights going to do battle. And I love this. I love this. And you know, I'm not trying to hate on Petr Yan versus Deiveson Figueiredo when we were in Shanghai last year. But I will say it is nice to have an actual Chinese fighter headlining a Chinese card. And if Zhang Mingyang wins this, it's going to take him to stardom levels. Johnny Walker, this is also a good matchup for him to bounce back, to get back in the win column since being knocked out by Volkan Ozdemir. Now, I can't lie, Zhang Mingyang is probably not the best opponent as he packs some unbelievable punching power. Zhang Mingyang also boasts a very impressive 19-6 record, and all 19 of those wins have came by finish. I think he has 15 knockouts or something. He's a knockout machine, 3-0 in the UFC, all finishes. Zhang Mingyang, Johnny Walker, main event in Shanghai, China. And you want to know what the co-main event is? Do you want to know what two gentlemen are going to Shanghai, China? How about the number 6 and the number 9 ranked featherweights, Brian TCD Ortega and Aljamain Sterling. What a fun matchup. What a super fun matchup. And Brian Ortega looking to bounce back from his loss to Diego Lopez, which has aged pretty dang good, if you ask me. And as for Aljamain Sterling, dude lost to Mozvar Evlov last time out. Let's not act like Mozvar Evlov should be getting a title shot. That makes no sense. He has to fight Aaron Pico. That makes no sense to me. But this is a fantastic matchup. And I think the main question is, can Brian Ortega overcome the grappling of Aljamain Sterling? And can Aljamain Sterling overcome the submissions of Brian Ortega? That's going to be the big deciding factor here. And Brian Ortega, it feels like he's in the latter part of his career, but oddly enough, Aljamain Sterling is older than him and might actually be entering the latter stages of his career as well. 16-5 UFC record for Funkmaster, and for T-City, 8-4 record with a no contest. So we're going to be getting a good matchup there in Shanghai. The main event and co-main event are very strong. UFC 318 in New Orleans, which is, let me just tell you, not strong. They released the main card for that. The co-main event is that Dan Ige Patricio Pitbull fight. I mean, what are we doing? We also have Ateba Gaudier, who, by the way, is a knockout artist, taking on Robert Valentine, who was just knocked out. And actually, no, Robert Valentine just lost to... Did he lose to... It was the grappler. Oh, my gosh. Torres Fitty, that's who he lost. So UFC 318 is just in rough shape. But prelim bout here, heavyweight divisions, Ryan Superman Spam looking to run it back after losing to Waldo Cortez Acosta. So let's not act like the last guy Ryan Spann lost to. He's now the number 6 heavyweight in the world. Makes no sense. He's taking on Lucas Braziak, the Bull. He's 1-5 in the UFC. I have no idea how he's still in the UFC. Winner, this is getting cut. The loser, loser, this is getting cut. The winner can stay for all I care. Road to UFC in Shanghai, China. Mind you, the road to the UFC is super weird because it's technically under the UFC banner, but it's not technically your debut. But in a weird turn of things, Rei Tazura, who, by the way, his only professional loss is to Joshua Van. That's right, the number 1 flyweight in the world, though, or second best besides Pantoja. He's fighting on here. He's fighting on here. You know, he won his UFC debut against Carlos Hernandez and then loses Josh Evander. They're like, we're actually going to have you go fight on not even an official UFC promotion. I don't even know how to explain it. There's probably a technical term. But he's taking on another guy who's been on the road to the UFC and has had a UFC fight, Nyam Jergal Turdenberil. That is right, the one with the goofy name who lost the last time we were in Shanghai. It makes no sense. I have no idea what they're doing, but this is going down the day before UFC Shanghai. It is very perplexing. I think there's actually another matchup that they're also having where it's with fighters who are already in the UFC. So goofy. July 26th, UFC Abu Dhabi, which is looking to be the best fight night of the summer, as a featherweight matchup as Muhammad Yaha back in action, looking to get his first UFC win. He's 0-2, takes on Stephen Wynn. Stephen Wynn, 0-1 in the UFC, did win on Dana White's Contender Series against AJ Cunningham, but that's not saying much. Stephen, absolute dog, did lose his UFC debut, but it was in a fight of the night. I'm excited to see this one. The winner of this will be looking upwards for career trajectory. The loser will probably just have a bit of lower stock for their next one. UFC Abu Dhabi also has a fun matchup in the bantamweight division as Davy Grant is back. Oh my gosh, it's been forever since we've seen Davy Grant. My goodness, takes on Damon Blackshear. Damon Blackshear coming off a massive win last time out. I can't remember if he beat Cody Stammen, Cody Gibson. He beat someone last time. I think it was Cody Gibson, if I'm not mistaken. He finished him. But yeah, let me just tell you, Damon Blackshear definitely should be beating Davy Grant. This is a great name for Damon Blackshear to take on. And be wary, the rankings are coming for Damon Blackshear. I can feel it. I think the winner of this one should take on Pak Chi Mix. That's my opinion. This is a good matchup, though, and you should keep your eyes on this one. UFC Paris has a fun one here. Light heavyweight division. Omar Sy back after losing his first professional fight to, Alonzo Metafield. Taking on Brenson Ribeiro. Brenson Ribeiro, 2-3 in the promotion. He's been all right so far, and if I'm not mistaken, Brenson Ribeiro lost last time out to someone good. Was it Azamat Becca? He lost to... They did my boy dirty. It was Azamat Mirzakhanov, I actually think. Yeah, it was Azamat. He took him out on short notice, and dude got brutally knocked down. To no one's surprise, but happy he's back in here getting another shot. And Omar Sy, good bounce back fight for him. I'll be curious to see what goes down in this one. And the last official fight, also on that UFC Paris card, Shauna Mama B. Bannon back in action. The Irish lad takes on Sam Hughes. Sam Hughes is the definition of a mid fighter who just manages to get by. 5-5 so far at the UFC. I'm not trying to be mean, Sam Hughes. You would beat me up, but I'm just saying. Perplexing matchups all around, but I do think that the UFC is heading in a good spot with all their fights for the rest of the year. Now, as for some of these cards, because let me just tell you about two different cards here. So we'll start with the bad. So there is a bad card, and here is the UFC 318 main card I want to talk about. This is, by the way, this is the $90 that you pay to watch. This is official. UFC 319 in Chicago still loading up. UFC 318 is just about made. Kicking off the main card, Michael Johnson versus Daniel Zalubert. That's right, it is the year 2025. Halfway through the year, Michael Johnson is opening a pay-per-view main card. Insane. Next up, Paulo Costa, Roman Kapilov. That's a pay-per-view worthy fight. That's a pay-per-view worthy fight. Will it happen? I doubt it. Paulo Costa, the Paulo King, but glad that's happening. Then Ateba Gaudier versus Robert Valentine. I don't care if one of them is from the region. That is insane. That is insane that is on a main card. After watching what we got for UFC 317, the bar should be high for pay-per-views. In the co-main event, yeah, Danny Gay, Patricio Pitbull. What? That's main card worthy, but co-main event, what? What? And even I think Dustin Poirier acknowledged, yeah, it's a pretty weak card for my retirement fight. But, I mean, Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier should be good. I hope if the fights deliver, it's something. But the fact that it's just not loaded up is pretty depressing. Now, on the other hand, here's your UFC Abu Dhabi main card. Main card right away. Nikita Krylov, Bogdan Guskov, top 15 light heavyweights. Shara Magomedov versus Marc-Andre Barliut. Marc-Andre Barliut coming off a nasty knockout of Bruno Silva. Literally sent him back from the company. Shara Magomedov, beloved in that region. Then, how about Bryce Mitchell, Seidner, Magomedov, two of the best unranked grapplers in the division with sneaky striking as Bryce Mitchell makes his bantamweight debut. Then, how about the number 2 bantamweight on the planet, take on the number 13 bantamweight, Petr Yan versus Marcus McGee. Love it. Mosvar Evlov, that is right, the number 4, it might be number 5 ranked featherweight on the planet, takes on the debuting Aaron Pico in the main event, Robert Whittaker, Randy Ritter. That is how you properly do a main card. UFC Abu Dhabi, so happy for that. UFC 318, you know what? I'm not going to say I'm going to illegally stream it. I would never do that, Dana White, but I'm certainly not going to be buying it. Let me tell you that. But yeah, that's all your new UFC fights that you need to be aware of. Lots of fun, entertaining stuff all around. Pretty hectic, pretty hectic. I'll tell you something else that is pretty hectic, and that is the emergency rooms in hospitals. And I was just so overjoyed to have watched this show, which greatly encapsulates it. It has an 8.9 out of 10 on IMDb with 55,000 reviews. This is just 82% on Google users, 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's right, The Pit. The Pit is a fantastic show. It shows the daily lives of healthcare professionals in a Pittsburgh hospital, and it has been regarded by medical professionals as one of the more accurate tellings of what it is like. And I was watching it with my girlfriend, and she's talking about all these different terms they're using and medicines and stuff and procedures. And she's like, I literally talk about those in my medical classes because she's going to be a doctor. So The Pit, amazing, simply amazing. The main lead in the show is Noah Wyle, most known for The Librarian. You also have Taylor Dearden in this, Patrick Ball, who's pretty much making his debut for acting, but Catherine Vanessa, Sean Hatoiza, Isa Briones, Fiona Dorif, Tracy Ayachor, a lot of unknown names pretty much. And they play such good roles. Like, it's generally so believable that they're doctor stuff. Like, I have to take, like, once I was done watching an episode, I had to kind of take a step back and go, okay, I'm not actually watching these people. This is actually a show. And the plot twist, the shock from here, it's so unexpected. And the emotion, like, there is just some heartfelt things in here. There is death in this show. And it just really encapsulates everything. And the best highlight of this, 15 episodes. It tells one shift for these doctors from 7 to 9 o'clock. That's their shift. Actually, it might be 7 to 10, actually. I think they went 7 to 10. That's what it was. Yeah, 7 to 10. I mean, amazing, amazing. You could say 9 out of 10 for me. 9 out of 10. Really, this was a fantastic show. And I'll say it gets better as it's going. And you never really know what the climax is going to be. And when it gets there, you're like, dang. Dang, okay, and they have this massive, I won't spoil anything, because I really want everyone to experience this, because you kind of go in, and, you know, first episode, it kind of gets you intrigued, and then they just start off right off the bat with, like, yeah, someone just dies, and then another person dies, and you have these stressful procedures, and this is just the daily lives of these people, and the show ends, this isn't really a spoiler, and they all just go home, and it's like, see you tomorrow. It's wild. It's really wild, and I highly recommend it. The Pit. They're making a season 2. Season 2 comes out January 2026, and it's about 4th of July weekend. I'm here, and yes, The Pit. It's on HBO Max. I don't know if you can watch it anywhere else, but yeah. As far as I can tell you, everything about it, it feels so real. It feels so real, and no bad acting. Like, everyone, I believe they're a doctor, I believe they're a nurse, I believe they're a patient. It's graphical, it's real, it's hard, and it is an experience. And you'll watch one episode, you'll be like, maybe one more. They're like, it's been 10 hours, and I've been through a 10-hour shift with these people. But yeah, check it out, The Pit. Highly recommend. It's called The Pit because it's like the bottom of the hospital. It's also in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so a lot of fun little Easter eggs there as well. Now, tell you something else, guys, where you can get Easter eggs. That's watching WWE. That's right. WWE is for all of my hardcore fans. That doesn't make sense. No, what am I saying? If you watch WWE, Night of Champions was this past weekend in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and we were blessed with six matches. Thank you, Triple H. Thank you so much. And, you know, the entire theme of Night of Champions is that you put championships on the line. And on this card, there were, in fact, only 2 championships on the line. Now, we did have the King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring tournament finals, so I guess you were crowned champion in that regard. But, I don't know, they kind of missed the ball by not having a lot of title matchups on here. I know some happened with Dominic Mysterio, and they had matches on the SmackDown before, but interesting stuff all around. But yes, let's get right into it and talk about what happened on Night of Champions 2025 in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And the first thing I want to say, this crowd, amazing, guys. Let me tell you, if you don't watch WWE, they started going to Saudi Arabia around 2018, and the crowd sucked. They used to just not cheer. They used to just all sit there, a sold-out stadium, sit there and just watch, pop for maybe the big guys. But now they're waving flashlights, they're singing the wrestlers' names, they're just cheering when big moments happen, and the Riyadh crowd was fantastic. And we kicked things off for the evening with the King of the Ring tournament final, the men's, and it was very interesting that they chose to open with this. Now, I see why they did, because the winner of this was going to see who they were going to face, whoever won the main event. But Cody Rhodes take on Randy Orton went just under 20 minutes, and this was great. this was great, and this was everything we could have asked for. Now, I will say these two definitely have a feud coming up for the championship, or even not for championship, but you're going to see a heel Randy Orton taking on a face Cody Rhodes in a mentor versus teacher type of matchup here. But Randy Orton, man, I'll tell you, the crowd was loving him, singing his theme song, Cody Rhodes, a star over the globe, and this was good. This was good. A lot of RKOs. I will say the RKO for being such a powerful, dangerous move, the most dangerous move in sports entertainment should be just called the most out of nowhere. All right, move, because, I mean, Cody Rhodes got hit with 3, 4, and kept kicking out of them, and I think Randy Orton got hit with 1 or 2 crossroads, and that was that. So I will say it was kind of a, wasn't lackluster finish, but it was kind of just like, the RKO just isn't as useful, but a lot of good moments in this. Cody Rhodes always takes big bumps, and yeah, Cody Rhodes wins the King of the Ring tournament. He is now King Rhodes, King Cody, and he'll take on, not to spoil what I'm going to say, but you should have already watched or seen the results, John Cena in the main event of SummerSlam, unless we do something else. But as of right now, John Cena and Cody Rhodes will be rematching, and yeah, Cody Rhodes, Cody Hogan, he's the top guy in the company. Don't be surprised he's always winning, but I will say he didn't need to win King of the Ring to get back at John Cena. He just could have gotten a John Cena match at SummerSlam. WWE just likes to give accolades to some of their guys. But yes, Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, great way to kick off the card. And you saw a bit of Randy Orton, you know, maybe trying to be sneaky, maybe looking to be devious, but kind of pulled it back a bit, then going a little heel, pull it back. So when these two inevitably have their feud, oh, it's going to be so freaking good, because they're both faces right now, just so you're aware. Following that, we had women. We had 2 women's matches in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and Rhea Ripley, Raquel Rodriguez street fight, 14 minutes. It was the 3rd longest match of the night besides the opener and the main event. And let me just tell you, one of the more surprisingly good matches of this card, a street fight out of nowhere with 2 women Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Should it work? Crowd was loving it. Massive spots. The ending of Rhea Ripley on the top rope on top of a table, hitting her with her finisher, which is essentially like a power bomb to the mat. Oh my goodness. And Raquel Rodriguez, you are pretty dang good. I was not familiar with your craft. One half of the women's tag team champions now with Roxanne Perez. And yeah, showing out in this one, Rhea Ripley earning herself a world championship opportunity with this win, I'm pretty sure. And yes, super surprising. This was made last minute. This wasn't even supposed to be a thing, and I'm so happy they did. Whoever produced this match knew what these two were capable of and allowed them to do this to the fullest, and this was phenomenal. This was utterly phenomenal, and 2 for 2 to start the night. Things were going good. Then, Sami Zayn, Karrion Kross. Now, I get some people had a problem with this match because Karrion Kross lost, and Karrion Kross was also getting the better of Sami Zayn. But I'm going to be honest, I like this. Sami Zayn is a Saudi Arabia guy. He's just beloved over there. The crowd was going crazy for his theme song, and they were even going crazy for Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross is over. But the one thing with the finish, I will say, it was like, Karrion Kross was just beating Sami Zayn, and then Sami Zayn, oh, Huluva kick out of nowhere, it's over. I get that's kind of how, like, personal wrestling should work. Like, oh, if you get hit with a finisher out of nowhere, it should stun you and you should get pinned, but it was kind of unfortunate to just see it end like that. I do get the storyline, but this was good. I had no problems with this, and these two are feuding still on Monday Night Raw. As I'm recording this, I'm getting little Twitter updates, so this feud is far from over, and I do think Karrion Kross, he's been able to rebrand himself pretty good, but I don't know what his finisher is, which is always an issue. So if he can figure out, like, to make his finisher more of a staple, like how Sami Zayn is the Huluva kick, then he can be good. But these two, there are a few reigns on, and this one asked for, you know, match, decent match, pace that was expected, and yeah, that's what you got there. Now, number 4 match of the evening, singles match for the United States Championship, Solo Sikoa defeating Jacob Fatu, 12-minute, 5-second match. What? I mean, what? I was not expecting this. I was also not expecting for this to be freaking the Bloodline Rules match. I mean, we were getting the return of Tama Tonga. We had JC Mateo right now. We had the debut of Hikalau, who I believe is being rebranded as Tala Tonga. So, Bloodline 3.0 in full effect. They helped Solo Sikoa beat Jacob Fatu. And yes, the Bloodline is here to take over once again. Wow. Wow, I did not think they were going to pull the trigger on Sol Sikoa and Jacob Fatu this early, but they did. Their feud is red hot now, and Jacob Fatu is going to need some backups. Winky face, the Usos, maybe even Roman Reigns. I don't know, but I'm invested. I'm invested. A lot of people may be like, oh, they shouldn't have done this too soon. They shouldn't have done this in Saudi Arabia. They're definitely building up something bigger at SummerSlam. Plus, I thought the match was good. Fatu and Sikoa, they're great storytellers. Sol Sikoa is super serious, yet super funny. Whenever he wants to be. And Jacob Fatu is such a menacing force. He's going to be fighting for the WWE Championship and World Heavyweight Championship in the coming months. This is a perfect good feud for him here. I'm okay giving Sol Sikoa the United States Championship. Two thumbs up from me. And yeah, it was funny. Michael Cole had no idea what was going on, though. I can't lie. Michael Cole was so confused for this match and the match we're about to talk about in a second. But he had no idea what was going on in this match. And it was so obvious and so funny. He was like, in the return of Tonga. Tonga's here. He didn't even know who either of the guys were. It was pretty comical. So, Sol Sikoa, your new United States champion. We'll have to wait till SmackDown to see what comes of that. Then, the second to last match of the night was the Queen of the Ring tournament final. And very, very interesting here. Winner gets to take on Tiffany Stratton at SummerSlam, and Jade Cargill defeats Asuka in an 8.5-minute match. I would not have pegged this for being the shortest match of the night. I'd have thought maybe Sami Zayn, Karrion Kross for sure, Rhea Ripley, Raquel Rodriguez, but no. 8 minutes from these two, and the crowd was just not feeling it. You know, I get people are saying neither of them had any aura, if you will, in this match, but I just think the crowd had just sat through Sol Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. They love that. They were waiting for John Cena and CM Punk, which is what everyone paid for, and neither of these women are massive in Saudi Arabia. They already were given Rhea Ripley, Raquel Rodriguez. They don't need another women's championship match. It's just the region of the area, and these two just didn't deliver. You know, it was slow, sloppy, and the finish, maybe it's because the crowd wasn't cheering. Maybe it's probably it, but Jade Cargill hit her with a finisher, and it was such just an anticlimactic pin. And not only did they not count the 1-2-3, they didn't react when she won, and it was just kind of awkward. You're like, we should just get Jade out of the ring. But Jade Cargill gonna take on Tiffany Stratton at SummerSlam. I'm sure she'll beat her. Naomi will cash in. Those two will have a feud. Yeah. Let's just forget this did happen. I'm not going to let this one bad match, you know, overshadow how good of a night it was. Because with that, we got into the main event for the undisputed WWE Championship, John Cena, CM Punk, and just 26 minutes and 15 seconds of amazingness. Amazingness. And, you know, John Cena started this heel run, you know, with the Elimination Chamber, amazing. Then the WrestleMania match was awful, okay? Randy Orton matchup at Backlash, okay. The R-Truth matchup, okay. Money Bank, triple six-man tag, decent. This has been the best match of the year for him. This has been easily the best match of the year, and CM Punk brought out the best in John Cena. And from CM Punk's amazing entrance to John Cena getting his ears cheered off with just a dumb black entrance. I mean, the crowd was loving this. Then these two lock up and start grappling, and the crowd is waving all their, I don't know if they are lights or flashlights or wristbands or something in the air, but they were going ballistic. And I'm in the gym, and I'm literally like looking at this between reps. I literally stopped. I'm just watching my phone. I'm like, this is awesome. This is awesome. You can feel the animosity in the room, and they're hitting each other with their finishers, and John Cena hits an AAA. Then he hits a super AAA. And then CM Punk hits him with a go to sleep. And then CM Punk's doing AJ Lee's finish drama. And then they're diving out of the ring. They're going over the announce table. It was so action packed. Then it reached a point. It reached a point you're like, okay, one of these guys is going to hit a finisher. John Cena goes at CM Punk. CM Punk moves out of the way. Down goes the ref. And right when the ref went down, you're like, oh my goodness, some shenanigans are about to take place. And Seth Rollins comes out, burn it down, goes off, flames coming down. By the way, the Jumbotron at the Riyadh Saudi Arabia Stadium, amazing. This was a massive stadium, by the way. It felt like WrestleMania almost in this main event. And Seth Rollins comes out. He's in this flame. He looked like young Kane in this, for goodness sakes. Breaker and Braun security. Braun and Bond, whatever. Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker come out. Heyman's holding the briefcase, walking down to the ring, and then all hell breaks loose. Everyone starts going at it. And then you see John Cena and CM Punk teaming up to take out both these guys. Then Sami Zayn runs out to help, and Penta comes out to help, and Penta does like a freaking flip off the stage onto Braun and Braun Breaker and Sami Zayn, and then Bronson Reed gets AA'd. By the way, that's a 300-pound boy. That is a heavy boy. And then CM Punk gets Seth Rollins out of there, and that's just these two going at it. CM Punk and John Cena, and they go, they embrace, they shake hands, and then John Cena says, like, I'm sorry, I gotta do this, goes to low blow him. CM Punk reverses it, goes to hit the AA. Seth Rollins comes in trying to hit John Cena. He moves, clips CM Punk, down goes CM Punk. John Cena throws Seth Rollins out, hits him with the pin, and John Cena retains. Cinema. Simply cinema. I mean, it was amazing. Slides right out of the ring, almost like the escape that happened at Money in the Bank 2011 with CM Punk. Walks up the ring, smirk on his face, and he's like, yeah, I'm that guy. Yeah, I'm that guy. Seth Rollins is pissed. Oh my goodness. So good. Truly so good. And John Cena, man, this is the part where we were like, this is make or break for John Cena in his heel run. And it's so red hot. It is so red hot. I think SummerSlam is going to be very weird. SummerSlam needs something different to it, because if we just run current Cody Rhodes and current John Cena, and by the way, John Cena is a heel all day and Cody Rhodes is a babyface all day, Cody Rhodes is going to get booed and John Cena is going to get cheered, and it's going to mix up the dynamic. And if Cody Rhodes beats John Cena, it is not going to get good reactions from the majority of the WWE fan base. So I am just so excited to see what happens. We have a month until SummerSlam. In the meantime, you get Saturday night's main event, WWE Women's Evolution. That's going to take up 2 weeks in July. And then you just get a month of buildup for SummerSlam for majority of feuds. And CM Punk, I'm thinking maybe he goes after World Heavyweight Championship with Gunther. Him and Seth Rollins might still have a program, but John Cena, Cody Rhodes, they're probably going to be kicking off their feud again. Amazing. Amazing. Night of Champions gets a 8.8 out of 10. Really good PLA. Really good PLA. And when I look at it with some of the others throughout the year, it might be up there for the best WWE PLE of the year so far. And I'm really excited to see what we do with all of the championships and stuff. But were any of the results shocking? Solo Sikoa was the most shocking. It really was. And it was the only prediction I missed on, just because WWE just doesn't pull the trigger like that. It really doesn't. They really don't pull the trigger like that. So kudos to them for going after it, leaving us with a little shocking result there in John Cena CM Punk, one of the best matches of the year so far. But yeah, next time we see you, Saturday night's main event. I think it's like the 40th Saturday night's main event or something. I have no idea what's pivoted at. I think it's just Saturday night's main event in Atlanta. But you just got one matchup now, booked between Goldberg and Gunther. And if Goldberg wins, I think the WWE Universe is going to lose their mind. So Gunther should beat him, or beef off his resume, and just continue to be the Gunther that we all love and know him for. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, enough with WWE, enough with TV shows. Let's talk about UFC 317, because it delivered. It delivered in all aspects. 7-5 on predictions. Rough time. But we nailed the co-main event, nailed the main event, started out good on the prelims. I'm not too mad about our predictions. So without doubt, let's get right on into it. We got 11 fights to get through as, Ewert and Christopher Ewert and Jackson McVay. Never happened because Christopher Ewert came in 10 pounds overweight. Yeah, he was promptly cut from the UFC, and they're like, Jackson McVay, we'll get you an opponent soon. But with that, let's get into our 11-fight card and recap all the action that went down. Kicking off this event, we headed to the men's heavyweight division as Hanada Dinez took on Alvin Hines. And let me just say, you know what? These two boys went at it. This wasn't a fight of the night. This wasn't a technical masterpiece. But these two boys were trying to take each other's heads off. And at the end of the day, Hanada Dinez takes home the unanimous decision victory. Good stuff for Hanada Dinez. He'll improve to 9-1, an impressive 3-1. And the UFC, and bounces back from his loss to Marcin Tybura. Alvin Hines will lose his UFC debut and his first professional fight at 7-1 of a professional record for him. 112 significant strikes, this 82 in favor of Dinez. Alvin Hines goes 1 of 10 on takedowns, only 5 seconds of control time. I mean, Dinez has number. Dinez piecing him up round 1. Dinez really piecing him up in round 2, 37-17 significant strikes. And then round 3. 43-40 significant strikes in favor of Dinez. These two boys were throwing to take each other's heads off. And props to Alvin Hines, man. 33 years old, looking to take out the 34-year-old Hanada Dinez. I mean, he was just going at him, man. He was throwing bombs. They were landing. He takes the final round, but it's not enough. Hanada Dinez gets it done. And just really good Just really good. You know, for all the boring heavyweight fights I watched, you know, as much as we were expecting a quick knockout and we didn't get one, these two delivered. So this isn't going to be a fight of the night contender, fight of the year contender, but this is going to be regarded as a good match when I look back on this at our end of the year recap. Now, as for what's next for both of these gentlemen, I think Hinata Dinez deserves another crack at the rankings. You have your Martin Boudet at 14, your Mick Parkin at 12. Let's give this guy another shot. Tai Tuivasa later in the year. Whatever, we can do that. As for Robin Hines, I hope they give him one more shot. I really hope they do. And, you know, you have your Hamdi Abdulwahaps, your Muhammad Usmans, you have your winner of Ryan Spann and Lucas Brzezinski. You have so many options. Alvin Hines should get at least one more shot in the UFC. Because, to be honest, he took a guy in Hinata Dinez who was just fighting the number 10 guy in the world and really beat him up well. So I expect good things to come for both these two in their heavyweight futures in the UFC. Now, will Alvin get another win? All yet to be seen. But I do think Dinez has some potential. Following that, we headed to the men's welterweight division. We got our first finish of the night. Jacoby Smith, Nico Price, and Jacoby Smith came in minus 2,500 favorites. And Nico Price was like plus 1,400. And yeah, you get no shockers here. I mean, minus 1,400. You get no shockers here. Jacoby Smith destroys Nico Price. I do have to say, props Nico Price. Survived round one, even threw back a couple shots. But yeah, round two came out, then swarmed Jacoby, takes him down, locks up a rear naked choke. Game over. Jacoby Smith gets his first career submission. How about that? Improves to 11-0. This guy's a problem. This guy's a legit problem. He's so freaking good. He's so freaking good. And he's now 2-0 in the year 2025. I mean, he might be debut fighter of the year. I don't know. You know, I do have a list of my debut fighters of the year, and I think he might be on there for top one. I mean, this is two wins so far through the first 6 months, two great wins, and yeah, excellent work for Jacoby Smith coming in, only 29 years old. The future looks bright. And as for welterweight opponents, it's kind of just what type of opponent do we want to take on? Do we want him to take on an Alex Morono, a Santiago Ponzinibbio, a Vicente Luque, these aging veterans? Or do we want him to take on maybe more of a young gun of sorts? Maybe you throw in Gabe Green. Maybe we throw in Jeremiah Wells. There's multiple options of what you can do with Jacoby Smith, but I think whoever they give him next, this guy is 1-2 fights away from a ranked opponent. And to be honest, you know, I don't want to throw him to the wolves here, but do I think Jacoby Smith could maybe beat Jeff Neal, Kevin Holland, Carlos Prates? Maybe. I don't want to speak too soon, but excellent win for Jacoby Smith. Big future ahead. As for Nico Price, unfortunate. Unfortunate is all I gotta say. You know, he's 16-9 now, two fight losing streak, one in four in his last five. We can even go that he's 2-7 in his last nine. I think it's it for Nico. I truly think it's it. He's 35. It's not getting any better. If they did want to do a retirement fight for him just because he's been with the company almost 10 years, you could set him up with an age guy. Maybe, did Court McGee retire? Did he retire, Court McGee? I can't remember, but if Court McGee doesn't retire, you could run those two in a retirement bout. Wonderboy and Gabriel Bonfim might be coming up. I don't know, guys. I'm going to be honest. Nico Price, I think it's best if he just retires. It's not going to get any prettier from here. After that, lightweight division, Terrence McKinney, 55-second guillotine of a chest abortion. You know, I knew he'd do it. It's not like I was shocked or anything, but I mean, the sheer just fact of him going across, taking him down, and then locking up a guillotine choke from top mount, amazing. I mean, T-Rex, this is going to be his 17th career victory. Yes, 17th career victory, 9th career sub, making a 100% finish rate. Dude has never been the distance. And he's only ever been to round two twice in the UFC. I mean, he's crazy. He's absolutely crazy. 2-0 so far in 2025, both of them round one finishes. Combined time, under 3 minutes of both of those fights. And my wonder is just, who do we match them up with next? Who can we give to Terrence McKinney to give a fun opponent? I'm going to be honest, this is going to be insane. I know he's not going to get this big of an opportunity, but Hinata Moicano versus Terrence McKinney, I think could be lots of fun. fun. I think he's probably going to get more so of the Chase Hooper, Alexander Hernandez loser, someone like that. But Chance McKinney, love watching him. Domination. And by the way, he was born in Chicago. He's from Chicago. I say we throw him on the Chicago card. Get him a short-notice opponent of sorts. Do it in August. Terrence McKinney, great stuff. As for Vyacheslav Borshev, yeah. 8-6 and with a draw in the UFC. Two-fight losing streak. That's probably it. That's probably it. Yeah, I just don't think he's cut out for it. I'd say we send Vyacheslav to a unranked scene. Maybe he can bounce back there. But if he does stay, he's just going to be fighting someone off of Day One's Contender Series. There really isn't anyone that comes to mind that's appetizing. Vyacheslav Borshev, his time in the UFC may have came to an end. Following that, women's flyweight action, Tracy Cortez, Vivian Araújo, and great bounce back win for Tracy Cortez, beating the number 8 ranked Vivian Araújo. 30-27s across the board, 65 significant strikes to 22, 102 total strikes to 39, 3 of 5 on takedowns for just over 8 minutes of control time. And round 1, Tracy did attempt a submission, so we can't say she doesn't try and finish fights. Vivian was just able to survive it. But yes, good win for Tracy. She'll improve to 12-2 and bounces back from her fight main event against Rosa Munoz last summer. Yeah. Did everything she needed to. I mean, the submissions, the striking, anywhere this fight went, this was just the Tracy Cortez show. And honestly, got more dominant. I mean, round 5, 30 significant strikes to 5, 54 total strikes to 7. Yeah, Tracy Cortez, good stuff. For Vivian Araújo, I mean, the win-loss continues. Vivian Araújo is now 38 years old. Yeah, there isn't much left to be appetized for her. But Tracy Cortez back in the win column. She'll be ranked number 8. Who's next for her? It's tough to say. I'm thinking Macy Barber, maybe? But Macy Barber won't be back for a while. You could run her versus maybe Erin Blanchfield, her versus Manon Fiora, Alexa Grasso. She's now in the upper echelon of fighters in the women's flyweight division. As for Vivian Araújo, she'll be fighting down. I really like Wang Kong as a potential opponent. I think that could be a fun option. Or even Jacqueline Amorim. Jacqueline Amorim could be a good opponent for Vivian Araújo. But if not, Vivian Araújo can retire. She's never going to win a championship, sadly enough. But Tracy, she has lots of potential, and she picked up a win. Good stuff. And then Jose Delgado, Hedder Mil, my first incorrect prediction of the night. And son of a gun. Son of a gun, that's all I'm going to say. Wait a second. Did I predict 1, 2, 3, 4? I only predicted 4 matchups incorrectly. We went 7-4 on predictions. Okay, so 7-5. I added one for myself. We went 7-4. Not too bad. Jose Delgado, Hyder Emile, how about a 26-second head kick knockout? Not head kick, a knee knockout into some ground and pound. Jose Delgado runs through Hyder Emile, and you'd not have thought that Hyder Emile was 11-0. I mean, dude was just blitzed, just absolutely ran through. He's coming off a win over William Gomez 2 months ago. Unreal. But Jose Delgado, he's legit. He is the real deal. 10-fight winning streak now, 2-0 on the year for 2025. Both of them round one knockouts. Look out, Jacoby Smith. Jose Delgado is coming for that debut fighter of the year and make it his 100% finish rate as well. Jose Delgado is a Peruvian assassin. No, he's not from Peru. Isn't someone else is from Peru that we just talked about. I think Jose's from Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, absolutely runs through Hyder Emile in 26 seconds. Beautiful work. Any other fight night, this is getting a performance bonus. But unfortunately, main card in the fight after this were just too good of other knockouts. Good stuff for Jose Delgado. Featherweight division, always loaded and always willing to take on new contenders. I'm thinking Pat Sabatini next for Jose Delgado. I'm thinking if Calvin Kattar stays after he loses to Steve Garcia Jr., you run that. I'm thinking even, I don't know. There's a lot of options at featherweight for Hyder Emile. He'll definitely have a bounce back fight. I'll be curious to see how that one goes. I mean, he's 3-1 in the UFC. He's pretty good. I just think, I don't even know if either of these guys are going to get someone specifically better or specifically worse, like, if I'm being honest. And I think keep your mind open in case we're going to do an unranked matchup maybe, or it's tough to say, but Jose Delgado, momentum moving upwards. Hyder Emile, you've hit a block, and at 33 years old, you're going to need to overcome it most definitely. So, yeah, best of luck. I saw a Twitter thing from Khamzat Chimaev and Sean Strickland, and it was Khamzat Chimaev, like, Flicky to offer some, and Hamzat says, "Sorry, bro, I don't know how to use Twitter. Wrong guy. I have no idea." Oh, I think it was he tried to tag Sean Strickland, but he tagged some random guy's account. Hamzat Jemayev, you absolute beauty. But speaking of the men's middleweight division, perfect segue. Middleweight division: Gregory Rodriguez, Jack Hermanson. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I do want to say this: is that Jack Hermanson does not get often finished. Jack Hermanson does not get often finished. Now, despite out of his 9 losses, he's been finished 6 times. We had not seen him be finished in 6 years. It had been a long time since we had seen Hermanson. Actually, maybe Hermanson got finished by Roman Dolidze, now that I'm thinking of it. Just not in bad fashion. And Hermanson taking on Rodriguez is outstriking him. You know, he's getting the better of exchanges. And then Gregory unloads with a hook, and Hermanson goes out cold. Just brutally cold. I mean, he's out like a light. And Herb Dean takes a sweet time. Rode an escalator down to stop that matchup. And Rodriguez landed some very unnecessary follow-up. But anyways, RoboCop, 10th knockout, 14th career finish, and he's so bad. He is so back. What a nasty, nasty knockout. I mean, oh my goodness. Jack Hermanson was out for a while, too. I mean, he put him out cold, earned himself a 50K performance bonus. I mean, I knew Gregory was going to win, but to put his lights out that cold, first time fighting in over a year and a half, and yeah, Jack Hermanson, might be time to go back to the independents. You know, I'm just kidding. Jack Hermanson is probably going to be taking on someone of like a Bo Nickel, maybe going to be taking on a Andre Munez, maybe even loser of Bruno Ferreira, and oh my gosh, who's the guy that Robert Whittaker beat? Ikram Akhachev, guys like that. Even Nursultan Rzaboyev, Brian Battle, winner of that, you know. But Greg Rodriguez, man, middleweight division. I mean, he, what a bounce back from getting knocked out by Jared Cannonier too, might I say. It's tricky where to place him, but I would love Paulo Costa, Roman Kopilov, winner of that. Even just Paulo Costa in general, I think Paulo Costa versus Greg Rodriguez is a fight to make. If you want to put him even farther up the chain, number 8 ranked Roman Dolidze is taking on number 9 ranked Anthony Hernandez, loser of that. Number 10 ranked Marvin Vettori is taking on number 11th ranked Brendan Allen, loser of that. RoboCop belongs in the rankings. That's weird to think. He's only 33. I mean, this dude looks old, and he's not that old. So, great knockout for Greg Rodriguez at prelims. Overall, I mean, I will say the only doozy, Tracy Cortez, Viviana Rujo, which I hate to just fall into the stipulation that all women's matches are boring, but besides that, all the other prelims were fantastic, and we had 3 round one finishes. You can't beat that. Good prelims from UFC 317, and unfortunately, guys, I missed the first 3 fights of the main card. I was traveling, I was drinking with my boys, having a good time, so I missed them all. So Peyton Talbot, Felipe Lima, I did not see what happened, but from everything that I've heard, Felipe Lima won round one, Peyton won the last 2, and it was a decisive 29-28 victory for the young lad, Peyton Talbot. And good bounce-back win for Peyton. You know, he's 26 years old, had just been humbled by Raoni Barcelos. This is the exact win he needed to get. 59 so given strikes to 26, 97 total strikes to 37, defends 3. Defends, actually 12 of 15 takedowns. He was taken out 3 times. Reversed and even had more control time over Felipe Lima. So great stuff for Talbot, the Frank Ocean, maybe potential lover, getting it done. Good stuff, Peyton. Really, and I'm not too surprised. Felipe Lima, though, absolute dog. Let's not act like Felipe Lima isn't freaking talented. Peyton Talbot just had his number. The consensus of this was that Felipe Lima throwing too many spinning things, shooting bad takedowns. Peyton remained very concise, reversed things, kept the striking on his side, landed some power punches, and got it done. So Peyton Talbot right back in the conversation, and almost it's giving Joshua Van vibes. I don't think he's gonna be like Joshua Van, but certainly I think he can bounce back pretty quicker with suffering a loss, and I don't really see Felipe Lima dropping too far. Raoni Barcelos. I'm referencing how Joshua Van lost to Charles Johnson. We're about to talk about this not even a year ago, and he's now the number one guy. I'm thinking Peyton Talbot lost in January to a veteran, and I think he can easily bounce back. Now, what do we do next with him? I think we need to build. I don't know who. You know, I was mentioning that Damon Blackshear fight coming up. Winner of that could be pretty good. It's tricky because I do not think we should be giving him a certain style of opponent. Like, honestly, I know they shouldn't do it, but Raul Rosas Jr. versus Peyton Talbot would be kind of fantastic. So I'm actually going to throw my name and say that's what you should run next, but they probably should build up both of them. So maybe we hold off. As for Felipe Lima, he's legit. We'll bring him back. Against who? I don't know, but Felipe Lima will definitely be back. After that, lightweight division, Hanamoy Kanabir, I use so much potential with this, so much potential, and just, didn't end up working out. No, did not work out. But number 9, Bilal Dariush beats number 11 ranked Hinata Moicano in boring fashion. Round 1, Hinata goes out there, drops Bilal Dariush, you know, it was like, what the heck is going on? Good stuff. And then Bilal turned to the grappling, and for some reason, Hinata could not defend a takedown. 5 of 5 on takedowns from Bilal, 6 minutes of control time, including 4 minutes 46 seconds. In round 2, these two atrocious in the striking. Moicano dropped Bilal. Other than that, just really bad. Really bad from these two. And the age showed for Bilal. And Moicano just gassed out. And it's heartbreaking. Really, it's heartbreaking because Moicano had so much potential. And now, 2-fight losing streak at 36. I don't know what he's going to do from here, man, to be honest. But for Bilal, I mean, 36 years old as well. Now he's in the win column. His losses are now to the number 1 and number 2 ranked guys. You know, kind of his age, not too shabby. I think the big question is, what do we do next with these two? And like I said, Moicano versus Terence McKinney would be so much fun. But for actually look at the rankings, he's ranked number 11. Joel Alvarez, Benoit Saint-Denis, Grant Dawson, guys like that are going to be who Moicano's taking on next. And as for Bilal, he cannot look up because Paddy Pimblett would beat him. The two Scaramont has far surpassed him since then. Dan Hooker's not it. But a guy, Rafael Fiziev, just came back, just got a win. How about we run Fiziev, Dariush, perfect opportunity for one of those guys to move up. Or he can rematch Matus Gamrot. And I think Matus can get his lick back. So kind of a dull fight there, but not dull enough to the point where I think people were complaining. Just kind of like, these are two studs. These are two top 10 lightweights, and I feel like they should be fighting better than we expected of them. But then, ladies and gentlemen, following that, I am so sad I missed this. I am very sad I missed this. I swear this happened last year where I missed a potential fight of the year contender. But Joshua Van, Brandon Royval, just going to war. Actually, became the first two fighters in UFC history to land 200 significant strikes on each other. I cannot believe that is a real thing. But Joshua Van gets it done. Wow. Unreal. Van takes round 1. Royval round 2. It's going down to the wire round 3. Van lands a knockdown, becomes the deciding factor. Amazing. 29-28, 29-28, and Clemens Werner with a 30-27. Yeah, that's actually rigged. I kid you not, that is definitely rigged. Insane. Brandon Royval attempting 468. Insane. Here's another insane stat for you. Joshua Van, 66% accuracy on significant strikes. 204 of 305. Crazy. And I mean, these two just throwing bombs at each other, doing anything they can to take each other out. I mean, 87-7 strikes in round 2 for Royval is crazy. Van taking 215-7 strikes, being absorbed and winning, utterly insane. I feel like I should go back and rewatch this. I low-key feel like I should go back and rewatch it. I'm actually going to add it to my notes. Rewatch Van versus Royval because I think I need to experience this because there's just a striking affair. Striking affair and no takedowns even attempted. This is exactly what you look for in a UFC fight of this caliber. Insane. And Joshua Van is go-go ranked from number 12 to number 1 and is taking on Alexander Pantoja next. Insane. Insane. The win streak is at 5 now. And like I told you guys, he knocked out. Knocked out cold 20 seconds into round 3, July 13th, 2024. June 29th, 2025. Actually, I think it's going to be July 1st, 2025. So just under 12 days under a year, he will be ranked number 1 in the men's flyweight rankings. Royval will get bumped down to 2. You're actually going to get a huge bump. 10 guys are going to get bumped down one spot, but just surreal. Surreal. So Joshua, by the way, he's 3-0 in 2025, and his first fight was March 8th. Beats Ray Tazura, literally knocked Ray Tazura to the road to the UFC. Beats Bruno Silva, literally got Bruno Silva kicked out of the UFC, I'm pretty sure. And now beats Brandon Royval, who's everyone's been waiting for him to be beat. Insane, amazing work from Joshua Van. As for Brandon Royval, look, this guy is just nonstop action. He has not had a bad fight in the UFC, maybe one in 2022, but this is now 2 straight fight of the nights in a row. Now, this guy always brings it. And Brandon Royval, thank you. Thank you for taking this fight. And do not hang your head low. None whatsoever. This just is best for business, having a new guy challenge at the top. But who's Royval going to face? Well, you got Amir Albazi taking on Tatsuro Taira. You could run that back. Rebook Royval versus Manel Cape. You could rebook Royval versus Kaikara France. You could give Royval the winner of Astuo Mabayev and Ramzan Temirbayev. Unlimited options. Whatever matchup they do, I'm not going to be surprised. If they do Royval versus Moreno, I might just off myself. But other than that, everything else, fantastic. And yeah, I will definitely have to rewatch this since people are saying this is currently the best fight of 2025. And yeah, I missed Gamrot and Hooker last year, and now I missed this one. Yeah, I swear when I just don't watch the third fight on a UFC pay-per-view card, they have a fight of the night. Maybe that's what I need to start doing. But staying with the flyweights divisions, Pantoja, Kaikara France going at it, co-main event. And there's just something so beautiful about the way Pantoja just dismantles opponents. It's just a science to it. It really is. Alexander Pantoja literally picks apart and destroys Kaikara France. Kaikara France, you got yourself an undisputed title shot. That's probably going to be the peak of your career. But I mean, 42 cinnamon strikes at 38. We knew Kaikara France would hang in there on the feet, but 70 total strikes, 57, 3 of 6 on takedowns, 7 minutes and 20 seconds of control time, leads to a round 3 rear naked choke. Pantoja dominates. In round 1, 4 minutes, 45 seconds of control time, Pantoja took him down and controlled him. Round 2, Kai kept it on the feet pretty well, but despite having the striking advantage, was outstruck by Pantoja. I think Pantoja is getting better with every fight. Round 3, Kai is merely getting the better of him, and yeah, like 15 seconds in, Pantoja takes him down, manages to get into back position, submit him, the cannibal eats another one. Yeah, so real. Make this 8 wins now in a row for Alexander Pantoja. This is his 4th title defense. Let's be real, guys. He is not a number 9 pound-for-pound fighter, okay? We need to move him up in the rankings, because I think Ia should be 1. I think everyone kind of agrees Ia Topuria should be number 1 pound-for-pound. So what are you going to do? Ia moves up to 1, Islam to 2, Merab goes down to 3. What do we do with Pantoja? Pantoja, who's above him? Alex Pereira? No. Tom Aspinall at 8? No. Jack Del Maline at 7? No. Volk at 6? You have to understand, this is not 2021, 2022 Volk. No. This is 2025 Volk. Pantoja has had 4 straight title defenses. Absolutely not. Move him up to number 6. Magomed Ankalaev just won the belt. I understand he's not a crazy win streak. He just won the belt. Move Pantoja up. DDP at 4. I can see the case, but really, I think Alexander Pantoja should be either the 4 or 5 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. Whatever is lower than that, I will not hear any arguments. It is utterly ridiculous. But I mean, just domination from Pantoja. And yeah, we have his next opponent in Joshua Van. And they squared off in the ring. And I kid you not, Van looks so ready, but Pantoja looks so unfazed. Like, okay, I'm taking on a 23-year-old kid. Yeah, going to be weird. But I don't know when they're going to do this. I'm thinking Pantoja's last fight was December. So that was a little 6-month change. You're going to see this in the fall. Probably going to see this in the fall. And I do think Joshua Van has a great opportunity to beat Pantoja, but I'm going to need to see the takedown defense. I'm going to need to see Joshua Van use the takedown defense, because right now, Kaikara France, Kai Sakura, Brandon Royval, Steve Ersik, they all fall to the takedowns of Alexander Pantoja. Great work from Pantoja, and Kaikara France, similar to Royval, anyone in the top 10, I can see a case for fighting. So really, I will not be shocked with anything. These two are, Royval and Kaikara France, kind of in the same scenario where it's just like, huh, where do we go from here? We'll have to see. But with that, we dove into our main event. And yeah, shocking is, you see, we knew it was going to be good. We predicted that Topuria would get a round 1 knockout. That is what we said was going to happen. But then it's like actually seeing it. It's actually watching him do it, and you're like, this just doesn't even feel real. It really doesn't. People are saying that Jack Del Valeda beating Bilal literally changed the timeline of the UFC, which is kind of true, because if Bilal would have retained, Islam wouldn't have moved up. Islam would have remained at lightweight and taken on Ia Topuria, but instead, he moves up to welterweight, opens up the door for Charles Oliveira, and Ia Topuria knocks out Charles Oliveira in 2 minutes and 27 seconds. To make matters even crazier, Charles Oliveira went to take down Ia Topuria, and Ia Topuria reversed it. It didn't officially take him down, but got on top of him in full mount position. Gets on the feet, they're striking at each other, and literally just gets clipped with a combo, left to the hook, like left was it left? Might have been right, actually. I clipped him with the right, and Charles didn't just get, like, TKO'd. He got KO'd cold. Ia lands two unnecessary follow-up shots. Oliveira is out cold on the floor in under 2.5 minutes. Wow. Just wow. Just wow. Ia Topuria, 17-0. 15 of them finishes. He has had a performance or fight of the night bonus in every single fight since March of 2022. Utterly insane. Insane. 7 career knockouts now for Ia Topuria, and he has now knocked out Alexander Volkanovski, Max Holloway, and Charles Oliveira in a 3-fight stretch. Crazy. Utterly in, just simply crazy. Just insane. Tough loss for Charles. Nothing new, though. Really, nothing new for Oliveira, but yeah, wow. Wow, wow, wow. I do feel bad for Charles, big Charles Oliveira fan, but man, sorry, Charles. Ia Topuria is just so fun to root for. Ia Topuria is my modern-day McGregor, and I'm just pumped. I'm pumped to see what the future holds for him. But yes, he should be number one pound for pound. I know Islam is tied for the second longest UFC win streak of all time, but he's not a double champ. If Islam goes out and beats Jack Del Maddalena, he deserves to be double champ, and not double champ, pound for pound. But I kid you not, guys. Something big is coming. Something big is coming, and I don't know what it's going to be. But if Islam Makhachev beats Jack Del Maddalena, we are then going to have this scenario where Islam and Ia Topuria are both technically double champs. They both don't like each other. And depending what I think is going to happen is both these guys are going to want to get a defense in that weight class. Because Ia Topuria, they gave him 2 belts. They regard him as a double champ. They just don't want 2 divisions being held up. They saw it with DC. They saw it with McGregor. They saw it with Amanda Nunes. They've seen it with Henry Cejudo. It just doesn't work. So Ia Topuria is your unofficial double champion. But there's 2 options here. There's 2 options. I've seen them both. I've seen them both. So there's 3 people at lightweight. There are 3 people at lightweight. There's Armin Tsarukyan, there's Justin Gaethje, and there's Paddy Pimblett. Now, Paddy's all the way down there at number 8, and he's probably going to get booted down to number 9 or something. I kid you not. But Paddy Pimblett holds such a good case. He just destroyed Michael Chandler, okay? He has a bigger cult following than I'm pretty sure. Let's count the guys in front of him. Matheus Gamrot, Dan Hooker, Poirier, Holloway, and Gaethje are close. Same with Oliveira. Armin, way bigger than Armin. But he's so over in England, it's absolutely crazy. He's so over in England. And him and Ia have been talking for a while. They're both finally in the same weight class. I think they want to do this now, then instead of lose this. But apparently DDP announced they're going to run Gaethje versus Paddy, and the winner gets Ia Topuria, which I could also see happening. Now, I don't really want to see Justin Gaethje fight for another belt. I've seen Khabib dismantle him. I've seen Charles Oliveira dismantle him. I've seen Max Holloway dismantle him. Titles and Justin Gaethje just don't agree. But if he does beat Paddy, he'll be undeniable. The other man, Armin Tsarukyan, I just think is so unlucky. You know, he missed his title shot in January, has not taken another fight. I would have rather seen Armin take on Justin Gaethje, Paddy take on Ia. Winner of those face up. There's even a scenario where Volk comes down, or even Ia Topuria goes down to featherweight and wins back the belt against Volk. I don't know, but I say you run Paddy. I say you run Paddy. Islam beats Jack Della Maddalena. We then do Islam versus either Kamaru Usman, Shavkat Rachmanov, or the winner of Ian Gary and Sean Brady, which I think, guys, I kid you not. I kid you not. Here is the insane timeline we may live in. You may see Islam Makhachev beat Jack Del Maddalena, his title defense be against Ian Gary, Ia Topuria have a title defense against Paddy Pimblett, Ia Topuria versus Islam Makhachev, both double champions, fight in, I don't know if they're going to fight at lightweight in a 160-pound super weight class. You may see them both fight the biggest super fight in UFC history. I don't know, but insane. Insane. Ia Topuria has opened up, he might be the GOAT. Ia Topuria might be up there in the GOAT conversation. I mean, he's 17-0. I mean, dude is insanely good. He really is. As for Charles, sweet Charles Oliveira, tough to say, man. Charles is unfortunately 35. You know, people forget about that, and I don't know what he's got to fight for. I think right now it's fan service. I really think it's fan service. And for Charles Oliveira, it just sucks he lives in the same world as Islam Makhachev and Topuria, who are just built statistically to beat him. They're strategically structured together by God to beat Charles Oliveira. But what's next for Charles? You know, he can take on Max Holloway. Win or lose against Dustin Poirier, he can take on Max Holloway. He can take on Dan Hooker. He can take on Mateus Gamrot. He can take on Hafa Fazeev. He can rematch Michael Chandler again. He's not going to do that. But, you know, Charles can do whatever he wants. And, you know, what I really think we should do with Oliveira, give him a fight night main event. Have it in Brazil. Have him fight someone on the come up. Make it really exciting. Have him take on Joel Alvarez. Have him take on Dan Hooker, Mateus Gamrot, someone like that. And just give him a fight in front of a Brazilian home crowd. But, yeah, Charles, we will always love you. Ito Pura, you are truly, truly a savage. So I cannot wait to see what the UFC rankings are updated to. But, yeah. That's all we got on today's episode. We won't be back for a while. There is literally nothing to talk about for 4th of July weekend. We'll actually be going to a festival in Milwaukee, Summerfest. So we're going to be having a good time there. If you're there, come see me. I doubt anyone listens to this that's from there, but you never know. Always got to throw it out there. So, guys, once we're back, we'll be talking about UFC Nashville, Derek Lewis, Tal Sean Teixeira, Saturday night's main event. Maybe I will have watched a new show by then. Who knows? Maybe I've watched Squid Game Season 3, which is out apparently. Narcos, The Chosen. A lot of shows I've been recommended. But everyone, have an amazing 4th of July. Have an amazing week. And yeah, keep in touch with me, guys. I always love the support. And I know I've been saying forever, I need to level this up. I genuinely need a plan. I need to formulate a plan of how I can get good Wi-Fi, record myself, make videos. I will find out a way, guys. I will do it for you. I will do it for myself. I will do it for my family. Guys, we're rambling. I'll catch you next time on The Surprise Jab Podcast.